Hi, families. Welcome to this episode. Before we get started, I wanted to take a second to tell you about Gab Wireless. They are the creators of the world's safest phones for kids ages 4 and up. Now, I'm speaking as a parent who has had to deal with making the decision of whether or not to get my kids cell phones. So I highly recommend that before you buy your child a cell phone, do yourself a favor and look into Gab's devices. They are the perfect alternative to fully loaded smartphones. And they include everything that your child needs to stay connected to you, minus the distraction and risks like social media and the internet. Plus, I can personally attest to how nice it is to talk to my children on their own devices instead of having to go through my ex. For example, my older daughter, who's around 12, has the Premium Plus phone now. And my youngest, who is 6, has the watch, which she's had for a couple of years, and they call me whenever they need me and send me texts whenever they need me. So it's been really, really awesome for us. Not to mention how super affordable Gab's devices and accessories and calling plans are. So if you're in the market for a phone for your child, go to Gab Wireless, that's GABBWireless.com, and at least comparison shop, right? No harm, no foul. And if you decide to shop and get something, you can get an exclusive discount just for being a listener if you use our promo code. And that code is COPARENT. See? Easy to remember. COPARENT. COPARENT. So feel free to use it. And if you become a proud Gab parent, don't forget to tag us on social media. Hi, this is Rosalie Farnsworth, and you're listening to The Co-Parenting Collective. In this mini episode, we're going to take a look at a child custody battle, but from the seasoned perspective of a family court judge. I mean, can you imagine being a soft-hearted judge trying to decide on the future of innocent children in high-conflict cases? It must be the absolute worst position to be in. Let's find out what one really thinks in an excerpt from A View from the Bench by Dr. Carol Hughes, licensed marriage and family therapist. Perhaps it'll help debunk the myth that parents actually win custody in the courtroom. During a divorce, many parents fight about what courts call child custody. If you're listening to this, I have no doubt that you probably know what that is. But if you ask the average person who hasn't gone through a divorce or separation to define the word custody, usually that person will think that it's synonymous with like possession or being taken into custody for a crime. So why is a word with this most common meaning associated with our children? The answer to that is when parents separate or divorce, they usually begin battling over which parent should have more time, which parent is the better parent, and that obviously is very subjective, and what is in the best interest of the children. And again, that's subjective to each parent's opinion. So since they can't agree, they end up in front of the judge who has to referee and then decide on those issues for them. And some people might interpret our crime, so to speak, as being unable to address these ongoing parenting responsibilities and issues as a team. You know, it sucks. Like, why can't you guys agree? These are your children. So the truth is that yes, there are countless numbers of separated parents who 1000% need judicial intervention because of the real crimes that were committed in their relationships, such as domestic violence. And I'm not going to get started on what I believe should happen in those cases because, frankly, guys, I probably shouldn't go on the record with those thoughts, if you know what I mean. Now, that aside, A greater number of exes end up facing the judge because they simply refuse to speak to each other, even just to have a little conversation. They're so pissed off that they can't have a conversation about their kids. They can't do it respectfully. The sad part about that is that's usually when our children think that it's their fault for why the relationship maybe ended. Anyway, spoiler alert, guys, communication with an ex is hard. Yes, it's hard and it's difficult, and it would be probably hard whether you stay together or not, because clearly you're not that compatible, right? So communication with an ex is hard, but it is very necessary in order to tailor the best outcome for our kids. So if you go to court over just not being able to speak to each other, I'm going to tell you, you're paying a lot of money just to learn that you're going to have to go back at it, leave court and talk to each other anyway. Now, when educating clients about various divorce options and co-parenting options, sometimes divorce professionals, myself included, will respectfully depict the judge as a stranger in a black robe. Stranger in a black robe. And in doing that, we are merely emphasizing the fact that the judge is, in fact, a stranger to both parents and their children. And furthermore, some judges even speak directly to the parents from the bench and say, "Hey guys, no one knows your children better than you, yet here you are asking me to make the most important decisions for you and your family. You're asking me to intervene." So why do parents do that? Why do parents who could find an easier way to navigate from their divorce and separation into their co-parenting lifestyle, why do they go to court? Why do they put their child's childhood in the hands of strangers? I think it's because there is a cultural myth that causes us to believe that the judge will take our side. I think it's that simple. We think that once we get our side of the story heard, that either we prove that we're better or we prove that our ex is awful, that the judge will say, "You know what? That sounds right. I think that sounds like the better story. Let me go with that and I'll award custody and that parent will just take the kids and the other one can go kick rocks." But it doesn't work out like that. And that's why it's a myth. In fact, it is common knowledge among divorce professionals that judges regularly say, "Hey, if both parents are unhappy with my ruling, that means it's a good one." Please keep all this in mind as I read an excerpt from an article I stumbled upon called A View from the Bench. In the article, we get a fantastic look at the perspective of a family court judge. His name is Honorable Paul W. Garfinkel, and he is presiding over a custody case and expresses very eloquently the court's outlook as to why the parents should do all they can to resolve their issues before asking the court to intervene and decide the future of their family. I love the analogies that he uses, and I hope you do too. So I'm going to go ahead and read that portion to you. It's his quote and him speaking to this particular family. Here goes. I want to make a few comments to you about how important it is to your family to resolve this case. I know that as both of you sit here today, each of you is convinced of the merit of your own case and the rightness of your own position. However, asking your attorney to convert your convictions and beliefs into evidence that will result in a verdict in your favor is asking for what I have always believed the most difficult task that a trial attorney can be required to do. A custody case is much different than any accident case or a criminal trial. In those cases, an attorney is only asked to prove what happened at a specific date and place. All of the events are fixed and unchanging. Now, in a custody case, it is much different. You are asking your attorneys not to paint just a picture of a moment in time, but to present a movie. And that movie must show over a broad range of time how each of you parent. Then I must decide which of you is the better parent. That in and of itself is going to be unfair. Let me give you an example. Can you imagine if you had to prove that Da Vinci's Last Supper was a better painting than Michelangelo's creation? And say that you had to prove this to someone who had never seen either painting, and you weren't allowed to show the paintings to them? I suppose you could hire the curator of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, who would come to court and testify about composition, color, depth, character, and proportion. Or I suppose you could bring in some ordinary people to say which one they think is better. Maybe you could take a poll. This is what you are asking your attorneys to do in this case. They have to prove to me who is the better parent, but they have no way of showing me exactly how either of you parent in real life. They can't take me to the study sessions so I can see what a good tutor dad is, and they can't bring me into your child's bedroom at 5 a.m. to see how mom is comforting your child who is awakened with a fever. I want you and I want your attorneys to bring up those incidents that show you to be caring and loving parents, and I am sure they will try. However, it is more likely that they will be forced to show the other parent at his or her worst. Neither of these efforts will work very well. In trying to prove the positives, you will discover the inability of witnesses to describe the situation with the same force with which it occurred. And what you thought in your mind was so poignant, something you did as a parent, so poignant, vivid, or blunt, will become gray, neutralized with the passing of time. On the other hand, the negatives will seem to make you look like the worst parent that ever lived. Simple things will be presented as if they were the worst things. Did you ever send one of your children to school without his or her lunch? Did you ever forget to give one of your children his or her medicine? Did you ever forget their shoe size or favorite food? Did you ever say to your child, "Leave me alone, you are driving me nuts"? We probably have all done those things, and it will be presented here in my courtroom as if you are the most neglectful or abusive person. Because of all the things that I just mentioned, at the end of the trial, any goodwill each of you had for the other, if there's any, will have been totally destroyed. And that will be the foundation that you have to leave my courtroom on to try and build the next part of your lives together, which is continuing to raise your children. Doesn't make much sense, does it? It is both of you who must be parents of these children until either you or they die. Neither I nor any of these lawyers will be there for you for the remainder of this long journey. We could try to do our best to get you pointed in the right direction and maybe even help you along, but it is only in the first few steps. In the end, it is both of you who must raise these children, day in and day out, together. If your children could reach into their hearts and tell you exactly what they think and feel about what is going on here, they would probably say, "I wish mom and dad were back together." But knowing this will not happen, they might say, "I wish they would just stop fighting." No doubt they love you so much that they are probably blaming themselves for your original breakup. And this is why it is now time for you to get past the anger and put aside the hurt. You may even have to forgive. Either way, the pain that has been caused here, that arises from the conflict between each of you, has nothing to do with your children. And it is your responsibility to prove that to them by continuing to give them the stability and security that they need. Trust me, I've been doing this a long time, and your children want this conflict to end. You have the chance to leave here with an agreement that is in the best interest of your children, but it is an agreement that you must reach together. You must be willing to put aside your differences and be willing to accommodate each other's needs. You must be willing to understand that neither of you is perfect, and in your child's eyes, neither of you is the better parent. But most importantly, you must be ready now to put the needs of your children first. I know that your children want you to settle this case. And yes, I will do my best to turn your evidence into a sound legal document, but it will be no match for the intricacies of parenting. Now you can do the right thing right here, right now. You can put aside what has happened in the past, as terrible as it may be. This is judgment day for your children. It's not about you. It is their childhood, a lifetime of memories that they will carry, that you are negotiating for. And think about the critical damage you are going to cause these children if you can't get it right. Please, put aside your own egos and swallow your pride. Go ahead, leave it in this courtroom. We've had a lot of egos left in this courtroom. You don't see them, but I do, because I see parents who are willing to put their children's welfare above their own ego. And here they leave it, right here, right now, in my courtroom. And they walk out those doors, understanding what is truly in the best interest for their children. So what did you think about that? It was pretty powerful, wasn't it? I absolutely love it. I think it was perfect. And I wish every family court judge gave that lecture to parents who are fighting for custody in the courtroom. Now, the question remains, how can separating parents avoid these agonizing situations? I'm going to give you now 3 steps that can put you in the right direction. Step 1, talk to each other. Talk to each other about the best way to continue parenting without creating an imaginary power struggle. And if the kids are old enough, involve them in the process and give them the chance to speak freely and openly. You might not realize this, but research has found that when divorcing parents create their own agreements and include their children in the divorce process, sort of like normalizing and empowering them by doing so, the children and the parents are more well adjusted during and after the separation. And the agreements that they make, the agreements that the parents work within, are more durable and sustainable. By having these hard conversations, even though it's terrible, feels shitty and terrible, you can kind of reassure each other and set the tone by saying, hey, our separation sucks, but I will never try to take the kids from you, nor will I abandon you to raise them alone. And I think saying things like that to each other, starting there, acknowledging what's happening, and then presenting information to abate fear is one of the most powerful steps that you can take as you step into the divorce process. Step 2, contact a collaborative law professional. They take a way less aggressive, family-focused approach for respectful, peaceful conflict resolution and problem solving. There are collaborative divorce family lawyers, there's divorce coaches, co-parenting coaches, child specialists, and financial specialists. And they have all undergone specialized training to help parents learn and use the skills they need to co-create their own agreements including their co-parenting plans. Collaborative divorce and separation can help create win-win solutions for everyone. That's the whole point. The divorce and co-parenting coaches, who are the specialists in communication and family restructuring, like myself, can meet with both parents and teach them how to resolve conflict now and into the future. These are skills that you can use in every other aspect of your life, in your future relationships, in your job, with your kids. I mean, how would conflict resolution skills and the proper reasoning skills ever be a deficit? It just wouldn't be, right? That's common sense. Step 3. Once you decide to move on and you're ready to date and then eventually bring a new partner into your co-parenting dynamic, remember to take your time and choose wisely. I'm telling you a million times I will tell it. The wrong partner can quickly and easily disrupt the foundation you have so tediously laid. All the stuff that we just talked about, everything that you went through, not including how terrible the relationship was, all of it can be turned upside down if you inject the wrong person or bring the wrong person into your life. According to the Institute for Family Studies and many others, research indicates that the level of conflict within families is the number one predictor of how well adapted children will be within a marriage or not. So when separated parents engage in battle that's fueled by selfishness and anger and bitterness, they harm their children. Guaranteed. Conversely, it has been shown that the majority of children of divorce or separation adapt very well and see no lasting negative effects on their grades, social adjustment, or mental health when they have good relationships with both sets of parents or primary caregivers. And what I'm saying is they're fine if adults can basically get along. So you need to introduce partners that are willing to continue what you have worked so hard on. They need to respect it. And the bottom line is that children just need to see the adults in their lives working through the conflict resolution cycle in healthy ways. So ask yourself, guys, do you want to have strangers force you to subject your child to some mediocre custody terms that may prove to be suffocating for them? Or would you rather provide them with the kind of continuity and collaboration that will ease their mind and promote security and stability? I don't know about you, but we're all about option number 2. And I realize that some of you may be listening to this and you're in the thick of it and you don't know which way to turn. And that's okay. That's okay. But while you're figuring things out, always try to think of what your kids might say about what you're about to do. And think about what you would want as a child. And I've done that in my family, and it really helps shine a light almost immediately in the direction that I need to go. So I hope that helps. I hope this episode helps. And if you loved it, please don't forget to share and like and subscribe and do all the things you're supposed to do. But we'll be back with another episode very soon. Take care.